considery. The main outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the main outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the main outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the main outdoors.
Welcome to the main outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Okay, and welcome to the main outdoors. Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. Are so pleased you could be aboard tonight. We have an exciting guest. We'll introduce him in just a moment. But first, we want to remind you, if you'd like to be on our program and put a question to our guest, the number to call is
1-800-966-1039, and you have to dial a whole number, even if you're local.
Yes, sir, you do. And tonight, we want to introduce the crew first. You know, the radio crew that makes this show possible every week. The man behind the toggle switches in the operations center, the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, none other than Mr. Norman F. Plord.
Good evening, everybody. How's everybody tonight after all this rain we've had this month?
Well, Bob is happy because the brooks that he fishes are coming up.
Yes, they are.
And I'm a little tired of the rain. I know we need it.
He's been fishing my brooks.
Who has?
Norman.
I have been.
Have you been fishing his
yes.
brooks? And doing well.
Doing well.
Pretty good. He won't say any more than that.
I know. He's so
good.
Secretive. Anyway, that's good. And we want to say hi to Jim Layton, who we know is always standing by listening tonight with Wanda. And I want to give a shout out to some friends who came all the way up from North Carolina in their boat. And they are docked down in Bucksport. Say hi to Captain Drew Beck and his first mate, Pat. We hope they enjoy their stay in the state of Maine, and I know they'll get a chance to get some of those great lobsters and boil them on the boat. You bet.
Yeah.
Let's see. Also, without further ado, our co-host tonight, you know him well. He's a master Maine guide. He's written a number of books on fishing, and he ties a great streamer fly, my friend Bob Lehman.
Thank you ever so much, Paul. I appreciate it.
Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you.
And our guest tonight, he's been with us before, always enjoy having him on board, very knowledgeable about white-tailed deer, one of our favorite topics, and he's currently the deer biologist or the wildlife biologist for the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, Jerry Levine.
Good evening, everyone. I'm happy to be here.
Nice to have you here, Jerry. We always look forward to you being on our show. We're going to talk tonight with Jerry about a couple of things. We're going to talk about the new deer yard protection law, LD-404, which we discussed with David Trahan a few weeks ago. And then Jerry's got some interesting insights into that. And then we're going to talk a little bit with Jerry, which I think is an interesting topic, about deer yard basics. And if you have a question for Jerry, again, jot down the number.
1-800-966-1039.
And for the benefit of the Federal Communications Commission, we remind you you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9, and 95.1 down in Rockland.
And the Internet.
Yes, sir. Podcasts. You can always listen to past shows by going to WVOMFM.com and listen to us on the podcast. A couple of things here. Just want to remind you before we get to Outdoor Digest that it's brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. And the August issue is going to be about bears and bear hunting. And they'll be on the newsstand in, five or six days, I think, if everything goes well. And we invite you, if you don't have a subscription, pick up a copy at a newsstand. If you like it, you can call Alicia at our office during the week at, what is the number, Bob? 732-4880, I think. Yeah, 732-4880 is the number if you want to give Alicia a jingle, and she'd be glad to fix you up with a one-year subscription. Let's see, a couple of items here. Any deer applications are now open, and you have until, I think it's August 17th, I believe. Is that right, Jerry? August 17th, if you want to apply, you have to apply online. Nobody sends you any applications anymore. You have to apply online.
You got one, Paul, didn't you?
I've applied. I haven't got one yet.
You applied. Okay.
But fingers are crossed.
And,
And I
applied?
Yeah. I noticed, Jerry, a lot of my paperwork goes back a few years, and I noticed the wildlife management districts have changed a little bit, haven't they, from the last few years?
No.
They haven't?
No.
Not at all.
The last change in wildlife management districts was 2005.
Was it really? Oh, okay.
They dropped one of the districts. It used to be 30.
Yeah. Because I always thought that 26, I think that's where I'm in Hancock County.
It is.
I thought Bangor was in a different zone, different district, but it's not, apparently.
No.
Oh, that's interesting.
No. When we drew the line for 26, we went up on the west side of the Penobscot River, inland about a town or two.
Okay.
To pretty much give the whole lower Penobscot corridor in one zone.
Oh, okay. Anyway, if you'd like to apply, have you applied yet for yours?
Yes, I have.
You have, okay.
Yeah.
Do you, just a question, do you apply for more than one district?
I do not.
Yeah.
And that's a stickling point
yeah,
with
know.
Me. That's yeah. that's one of the, we may want to talk about this a little bit tonight
yeah.
because the department is in the process of reevaluating the Any Deer permit system,
yeah.
and I can speak to that a little
yeah,
bit if
well,
you want.
We'll do that.
Sure.
That'd be great.
Well, if they're bow hunters, don't they get a chance at two deer?
No, there's well, in the expanded archery zone,
yeah.
in the built-up parts of Maine, they get a chance at all the deer they want if they buy a permit.
Yeah. So? Yeah, you can keep on buying them.
No, I didn't know
oh,
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But regular archers in the firearms
yeah.
Open areas, they're like the firearms people, they're restricted to one deer only.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, don't forget to apply. Time marches on. You have until August 17th. Get those applications submitted. And it's an easy process. I did it. I figured it out. Jerry did it. And Norm, he's been able to do it. So if we can do it, you can do it as well. So be sure to check out online at IFNW's website, which is www.mefishwildlife.com. Check it out and make your application. Submit it early so you don't forget. Right now, we're going to bring in the band if our engineer is tuned in. And we are ready to bring in the band. Bob's music is all prepared? No. So I guess we're going to have to just...
No, actually, we have a computer issue. So.
Oh, we do. So we don't have any music.
No, I'm working on that right now, trying to clear it up
okay.
with Jim. So.
Could you give us a little, a little introduction? Big Boss Bass.
Big Boss Bass.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't
but everything else
my
is,
yeah,
huh? Everything else is working well.
Well,
how's it, what's going on?
Had a lot of rain, not as much as apparently what kind of rain we need is a drenching rain, not so much as these downpours, because as we were talking earlier, a lot of that runs right off, and we don't get the benefit from it, really.
Yeah.
But we need some drenching rain, and I don't think we've had it yet. I know Norm can say something about that, because he's been out fishing, trout fishing lately, and he said it's come up some, quite a bit, but nowhere near what it would be by this time of year.
Well, it can't be too bad because we have raised beds, for our veggies.
Yeah.
Diane, that's Diane's project.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
garden,
she hasn't had to water like she normally does.
We haven't watered our garden for two, 3 weeks.
How about you, Jerry? Have you had to water your garden?
No, I have not.
No, it's been...
We got a real drenching rain in early July that produced about 3 inches in that one storm.
Yeah.
Well, the day before that rain came, I dipped 20 buckets of water out of my pond and watered my 400 feet of potatoes. And then the rain came.
Isn't that always the way?
That's my luck.
That's the way it works, Jerry.
Yeah. If you don't want it to rain, bring your slicker with you, and it won't rain.
Well, that's probably why it rains so much.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So what else is happening?
Well, I was thinking today that trolling deep for togue and salmon, it's becoming a lost art today.
It is, yeah.
It is, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And even do you have any wire line?
I do. I have 10-pound and 20-pound.
Have you ever used wire line?
You're talking about lead core line?
No, I'm not talking about lead core line. I'm talking about wire line.
No, I don't. I've never used that, and I would not want to use it.
Why?
I don't know. I just don't like the sound.
Well, it works. It gets you down. It doesn't have the...
it's lead core.
It doesn't have the drag that lead core line
does.
It's got a terrible drag, and it'll loop on you up.
Yeah.
You're not as deep as you might think you are.
Yeah.
But wire line goes at a pretty good angle down.
Yeah,
as long as you don't go too fast, or even faster than lead core line, and you can get down where you want to get this time of year, down to the thermocline anyway, for togue, big lake trout and stuff. And you want to get down and put a couple of spoons on there. They don't do that anymore.
No.
So and sew a live bait on. They don't know how to do that, a lot of these folks. Now, that's a dying art.
Oh, it is.
I remember some old friends of mine used to sew their baits on, and they would lay it beside the boat and make sure it had one loop. They'd lay it, make sure it was, you know, crawling at the fast, right speed. And they would get that bait to just loop once, you know, and then go on and loop again, you know. You don't remember that, Jerry?
I don't even fish that way, so
yeah.
My speed is setting a gill net, so
well, there you are.
I'm out of your league on that.
Pretty good speed.
Yeah. Well, you know, my dear old dad taught me how to toke fish, and he was a fanatic about it.
Oh yeah.
And the only thing is, you get the deep hole at Branch Lake is 110, 20 feet, and to get on the bottom with a togar in August, you got to put about 110, 120. Yards of line out, and you put all that lead line out. You got to fasten yourself to the boat somehow, keep from being pulled out.
Oh yeah,
and so it's not really as exciting.
Well, now if you had wire line, you'd only need about wouldn't need half as much lead line because it, you know, doesn't have the drag of the water that and it goes down at a much better angle, and it gets you down where the fish are.
Yeah,
but as I said, I don't know if you can even buy wire line now.
Probably not.
Probably
but
not.
What do you call the thing with the big ball? I tried that one time. Got all bollocks.
Oh no, I had one of those.
You know what do you call those?
Downriggers.
Downriggers. Thank you.
Downrigger,
I tried.
Yeah.
I hated that thing.
Well, they have all these other things now. These things you put on the back of the boat, and they see where the fish are and how many there are and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it is a dying thing. It's kind of too bad. But there must be some older men out there that have done it and passed on to some of the younger folks and still do it.
You're looking at one of them.
You?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, that'll do it for me tonight, sir.
Okay. Good report.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Again, our number is 1-800? What is it? What's the
966-1039.
All right. Call us at that number if you have a question for our guest, Jerry Levine.
The number to call is BR549.
BR549.
Remember that?
No. That does ring a bell.
Junior Samples.
Oh,
hee-haw.
Hee-haw. That's right. Yeah. Well, our program isn't quite up to hee-haw, but we try to make
Pearl?
It so.
Remember Minnie Pearl?
With
the little price tag on her hat there.
Howdy.
Howdy.
That's pretty good, Jerry. All right. Anyway, we thank you for that fishing report. And we have now, we'll be talking to Jerry right after the trivia question and the commercial break. And we have a one-year subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal that we are going to give you a complimentary subscription if you can answer Jerry's question.
And the question is, in what month do bucks begin antler growth?
Okay, one more time, Jerry.
In what month do bucks begin antler growth?
Buck deer.
All right, 1-800-966-1039 is the number. And
there is no music because the computer is still down. So, in fact, there's you'll have to talk through this, Greg.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, that's good for you folks at home. You won't have to suffer through one of those dreadful commercials. And you can start dialing right now, 1-800-966-1039, if you know the answer to Jerry's question. He wants to know, when do Maine white-tailed bucks begin growing those antlers? And we have to have, a month. You want a month, right?
Yep.
Which month? And if you have the right answer, we're going to give you a $30 gift certificate subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal, Bob Lehman's all-time favorite publication.
Oh, you bet.
And the phones are ringing off the hook right now. The engineer's booth is lighting up with all those blinking lights. And we'll have a caller in just a moment, and we will dispose of this trivia question. We had another question lined up, quite frankly. And I think I might have been had by Google. I don't know. The question that we're not going to ask was, what do you call the July full moon? And there's been some discussion, differences of opinion about that, so we did away with it. We have a caller standing by?
Yes, we do.
Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, not bad.
And the first name and where are you calling from?
Eddington.
Okay, what's your first name, sir?
Dick.
Okay, Dick, you have an answer to the question?
Oh, I'm taking a good guess at it. July.
You say July. Jerry?
Negative.
Uh-oh. Get the rest.
I've got trail cam pictures right now of bucks with antlers a foot tall and branched out already.
Wow. Yeah.
And in fact, they shed velvet in August. So now we've narrowed it down to 10 months.
Okay. Did you, can I ask you, Dick, did you get that off the Google? Did you Google that?
No, I didn't.
Oh. Well, I Googled this the other night. We were admiring the full moon over Branch Lake, and people got asking, I wonder what they call that moon. And according to Google, it was called they call it the Buck Moon, B-U-C-K. And according to Google, it's named the Buck Moon because that's when, according to Google, that's when deer begin to emerge, their antlers begin to emerge. And Jerry, who knows his stuff when it comes to whitetails, says that ain't the case. So we...
Well, isn't that something?
Yeah. Yes, so anyway, you made a good guess, but that's not the answer, Dick.
Okay, so I'll take my second guess, June.
Well, you don't get
now.
To...
Now we're down to 9 months.
Okay. You're wrong again, Dick. I hate to tell you that, but...
Hey, we do have another caller.
Okay, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, all right. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, that was not the correct answer. We know it's not July, Jerry, and it's not June, right?
So correct.
By the process of elimination, we should be able to get this. We may ask who's buried in Grant's tomb, but we're not to that yet. Okay, what was that funny noise?
Oh, that was just the computer.
Oh, the computer. Oh. That computer is rascal.
But we do have another caller.
All right, good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. We're looking for a trivia question and answer. Go ahead.
Hi. I think it might be May.
You say May, and what's your first name?
Yes, sir. My name is Ruth.
Okay, Ruth, where are you calling us from?
Orono.
From Orono. Jerry, she says...
You're getting warmer, but still not May.
Oh, rat.
Okay.
I would have said May. I really would.
Nice try. Nice try, Ruth.
Quite early.
That's not the correct answer,
though.
All
right, thank you.
We appreciate you calling. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. We're really getting down to the wire here.
We have another one.
It wouldn't make any difference for this...
Good evening, caller.
The state rather than the southern part.
I just heard the young lady's answer, and that's what I was going to say, so I'll say April.
Correct. That's the one.
All right. Bingo. That's
all right.
And it doesn't vary regionally because all of this is controlled by day length. The length of day that operates and triggers hormones in the deer that set the antler growth in motion.
It has nothing to do with weather?
Nothing whatsoever.
Just
the
length of the amount of daylight, right?
Yeah,
isn't that incredible?
And
pretty much like plants growing then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's true.
What's your first name, winner?
Lou. L-O-U.
Lou. Okay. Congratulations, Lou. That's the correct answer, and we're going to make sure you get a subscription to the Sporting Journal. Okay.
Excellent. That way I won't have to buy it every month like I do.
Oh, I just lost $30. Doggone
it. I'm very sorry, sir.
All right. Well, we're glad.
It after my subscription runs out.
All right. That's the correct answer. Appreciate that, Lou. If you'll stay on
the line,
Norman's going to get your address, and we'll get Alicia to sign you up with a subscription first thing Monday, all right?
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Lou. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. All right, that's the correct answer, according to Jerry Levine, who knows his stuff. April is when the white-tailed deer begin to start their antler growth. And I guess you said August is when they begin to shed their
velvet.
The velvet, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And all of this is controlled by hormones that are primarily involved with testosterone, as you might imagine,
with a male of
any mammal. And the interesting thing is there's no set time for the antlers to fall off, the hardened antlers to fall off. That's more conditioned by how healthy physiologically the buck is after November. Bucks that completely spent themselves during the rut and are exhausted physiologically will lose their antlers early in December. Bucks that stay in good condition won't lose antlers until February, maybe March. And then once they're gone, they immediately start growing again in early April.
Yeah.
Wow. I've found shed antlers in December in old orchards, deer. Hidden orchards.
This brings me back to one memory. Years ago when I was checking deer for the department, I came upon a buck in a pickup truck that it was just a set of spike horns, and yet the thing was ancient. It was maybe 14 years old, okay? And I wanted to look at the deer and look in the deer's mouth, and I got the guy's permission, and I grabbed onto the antler to draw the deer closer to me, and it, the antler came off in my hand. And this is late November, so the hunter wasn't real happy.
No, I wouldn't think so. No. Okay, let's get down to business. Again, if you joined us late, our guest is Jerry Levine. Jerry was the deer research leader for the Department of Fish and Wildlife for, I don't know, what, 30 years, Jerry, right?
Yep, 1975 to 2005.
All right. And currently, he is the wildlife consultant for the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. And Jerry had played a critical role, along with David Trahan, in the achievement, really, of getting a deer yard protection law, which was passed. And if you're a regular listener to the program, I know you heard us talk to David Trahan a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was last week. I'm not sure. But anyway, David gave us a good breakdown of what that law represents. And it's really a very significant piece of legislation that will help the department actually outright purchase deer yards for protection in perpetuity. Let's start out, before we get down to some of the basics of deer yards, which I'd like you to talk about, Jerry, can you tell our listeners a little bit about the relationship between this particular deer yard protection law and other existing mechanisms that are designed to try to preserve deer wintering areas?
Sure. What the legislature just passed was authorization for the department to purchase deer wintering areas, and they would designate them as wildlife management areas within the department, which is important because now the department, in owning these deer wintering areas, can manage them the way the department feels they should be managed, as well as providing protection. And not only with the forest management aspect, but for predation management as well. So it's a pretty important step forward, and it gives the department a third tool for deer yard protection in addition to the two existing ones. The two existing ones are the Land Use Protection Commission, LUPC, used to be called LURC, has a provision for protecting deer wintering habitat that the department was all in on, and there are about 100,000 acres of deer wintering areas protected under LURC or LUPC, and that one designated habitat. And whenever a landowner wanted to manage timber harvest there, they had to negotiate with the department on timber cutting.
Yeah. So can you? So you got to put the spot on right now?
Yeah. Our engineer has got his mic. Mic is hot. Go ahead, Jerry. I'm sorry.
Okay. And.
Oh. Okay. Great. So.
Okay. Go ahead.
The second method is our cooperative agreements with large landowners, including other agencies in the state of Maine, and these cooperative agreements. Unfortunately, unlike the LURC law, they're non-binding, but the ownership, the landowner agrees to manage for deer benefits when they cut timber in and around these wintering areas. And the only real drawback to both of those methods of deer yard protection is the department is not in the driver's seat on determining exactly what and when timber will be harvested. It's always a negotiation, and the landowners may want to cut earlier than the biologist did, and it's always a difficult process. With this third method now, the department owns the deer yards. This negotiation now is eliminated, and they do what they need to do. Another important part of that law is the funding for all this. Right off the bat, the Land for Maine's Future program has been funded to the tune of $40 million. A portion of that is for purchasing deer yards. And as David pointed out, deer yard protection is one of the priority acquisitions now for the Land for Maine's future. This money also would be matched by other available funds, and we're talking over the next 10 years or so of tens of millions of dollars becoming available for the department to purchase deer yards. Just, that's a huge accomplishment for Sam and the department and for outdoorsmen in Maine.
Yeah, I've been watching Sam and its activities for years, and in my opinion, I can't think of anything Sam's ever accomplished that is as significant as this seems to be. Would you agree or not agree with that?
It's right up there,
yeah.
But I would rank the two bear referendums, our defeat
good
of the
point.
Antis
yes,
on that,
yeah,
and Sam spearheaded
yeah.
both of those
yeah.
As being very important of not allowing the Antis to get an inroad in our hunting privileges.
That's good point. Thank you for that. I appreciate you clarifying that. A little bit of a curveball. One has to conclude, if this is as significant as you think, and I think it is, and others do, couldn't you deduce from that maybe these other mechanisms weren't as effective as people had hoped? Is that being too skeptical, too cynical?
Well, not at all, but I'll approach it this way. First of all, the cooperative agreements are fine while they exist, but when a land is an ownership is turned over to another company by sale or easement, the cooperative agreement doesn't necessarily go with it, and the department has to renegotiate an agreement with the new landowner.
Okay.
So that's one problem, and there's been a lot of land transfers in Maine in the last 20 years.
Yeah, maybe 30 years ago, that wouldn't have been as big an issue, right?
That's right. And the second drawback is that we need about 400,000 plus acres of deer yard to get back to some semblance of abundance for deer in the northern half of the state. Currently, we're only managing approximately 200,000 acres under the Land Use Regulation Commission
and
the cooperative agreements. So we need to find a way to boost the amount of acreage. Pretty much doubling what we've got now.
Wow. So we got to have.
And this isn't going to occur immediately. This is something yeah. that's going to have to happen over decades.
Oh, yeah.
It took decades to lose our deer yards.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and at the peak of deer abundance in the northern half of the state in the late 50s and 1960s, deer were wintering on 1.2 million acres of deer yard. Today we're struggling along with 200,000 acres.
Wow!
And as a maybe a compromise, doable type of thing, getting up to 400,000 acres over the next 3 decades or so could be accomplished.
Yeah. So again, that's an important point. This is not going to happen overnight, but it's a good start toward doing this for many, many years.
And it's certainly a move in the right direction.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break. Again, if you have a question for Jerry, what's the number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039. You have to dial the whole number, even if you're local.
All right, you stay tuned. We'll be right back with Jerry Levine here on Maine Outdoors.
Next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're back with Jerry Levine. And again, 1-800-966-1039 will get you to the Maine Outdoors lines, and we'll have welcome you to ask any questions you'd like of Jerry Levine. We covered the LD 404, which we agreed was landmark legislation that has great potential over the next 20, 30 years to preserve in perpetuity these deer yards, and it's a third of three mechanisms to help protect these all-important deer wintering areas. Jerry, you wrote an article, which I think appeared maybe in the Sam News. I'm going to republish it in the August issue of the Journal because I thought it was very enlightening and interesting, and I thought it might make good fodder for discussion on our program here tonight. The article you wrote is called Deer Yard Basics or Deer Yarding Basics, And deer yards are critical. And I guess you lost your glasses there? I'll give you a minute to get composed. Anyway, I wanted to, I guess deer yards are more important for winter survival than coyote control, are they, do you think?
Oh, not at all.
That's not true.
Not at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I misspoke.
They're both critical to deer survival.
Equally so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, you can have, and we do have in northern Maine, intact deer wintering habitat that's vacant because over time, coyote predation has whittled the population down to nothing.
Wow. Okay. Explain to our listeners what a deer wintering area is for those who may not be steeped in all this biology. So what's a deer wintering area?
Well, no matter where deer occur across the northern half of their range, all the way from here to Montana, deer seek out areas in the wintertime that provide them a way to conserve energy and move about to get their groceries with the least amount of energy lost. Winter's cold. It takes its toll on the animal. They have to burn calories to stay warm. So they seek out habitats that will optimize their energy conservation. Now, out on the prairies in Manitoba, that may be cattail swamps. And where there's only limited snow cover, that's fine. On the coast of Maine, which often gets no snow or very little snow, deer still congregate in wintering habitat. In this part of the world, the deer congregate in mature softwood forests that these softwood forests tend to intercept the snow. Not all of it reaches the ground. What reaches the ground is harder, and they sink less into it. So what we are referring to as deer yards are a pretty important piece of the habitat on the landscape. And one of the problems with that maintaining deer yards is that mature softwoods are pretty valuable timber for the building industry and for the paper industry and all sorts of uses. So there's a high demand for mature softwoods, and over time we've seen that inventory go down, and we've seen deer wintering habitat decrease as well.
Yeah, so there's a tension between the market demand for wood and the protection of the whitetail.
There sure is.
Yeah.
And when you interpose within that cycles of budworm devastation, every couple of generations, the spruce budworm erupts and kills large acreage of the type of forest, spruce and fir, that deer rely on to winter in and landowners rely on to cut timber in. So you've got natural events like budworm, and you've got fire and other things that over time can alter the habitat.
Before I met Jerry Levine and he got very knowledgeable about white-tailed deer, I used to think that a wintering area had to be a cedar swamp with all cedar trees,
that, yeah.
And that the deer would survive by eating the cedar bark.
Yeah.
Is that that's kind of a myth?
No, not at all.
Oh.
In Michigan, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, most of the wintering habitat are cedar swamps.
Okay.
Enormous swamps of some of them township size, all cedar forest. And cedar as a browse is one of the best browses for winter survival for deer to feed on. We don't have that much good cedar swamp land here in Maine, and spruce fir or hemlock and pine provide the majority of the wintering habitat for deer in Maine. If a cedar swamp can be large and mature, deer will winter in it. And in fact, as a component of spruce fir deer yards, if there is, say, 10% cedar interspersed within all of that, that's even better because the deer will go around and feed on the cedar leaves that drop all winter long, and they just vacuum those up from tree to tree to tree.
Is there any nutrients for them in that cedar bark that I've seen them rip off? Do they eat that, don't they?
I haven't seen them actually peeling bark.
You haven't?
And on maples, on popples, and others, moose will strip the bark and eat the inner cambium, the inner live layer of bark on that. But
the deer aren't interested.
But when you see deer barking on hardwoods or cedar,
they're desperate, right?
They're starving.
Yeah.
And that's not a good management situation.
Yeah. So a deer yard can be small or very large, depending on the terrain, right?
A lot of the deer yards in southern Maine tend to be fairly small, 25 to 150 acres. The majority of deer yards that are valuable in the northern half of the state are 100 to 5,000 acres. And we've got a couple around Moosehead Lake I'm familiar with that are exceed 5,000 acres. And
wow.
That's a big area.
Yeah. David Trahan mentioned to me that we were talking about this whole deer yard thing. He said that there was a large deer yard, I think, east of Moosehead, the department was already interested in, and that they may use some of this money for that.
I'm not sure which one exactly he's referring to. There are several all along the eastern shore of Moosehead Lake. There's one great big one on the top of Moosehead Lake, the Subumic Deer Yard. That's a huge one. And excuse me, there's another very big one centered around Pittston Farm on the western shore of Moosehead, and also further down near Brasua.
Yeah,
there's another one.
Do you think, from your experience working for IFNW, do you think the wildlife leader, Nate Webb, right? Do they have in mind
the wildlife director or the deer biologist?
The wildlife director.
Okay, Nate Webb. Yeah.
Nate Webb. Yeah, and of course Nathan Bieber has your former job.
Right.
Do you think they already have a number of deer yards kind of on in their mind that they might like to purchase already, or is it going to take a study?
No, they're actively looking at specific areas now. The regional biologists, and there are seven regions, and there are four that occur in the northern half of the state. They all know where the major yards are, and they're in the process of evaluating which ones have the highest priority.
Yeah.
And they've already prioritized some for coyote control. So
they know already.
You know, over the last 10 years, so you know, they're on to that.
Yeah. Oh.
The question is, how do you find a willing landowner to sell to you?
Yeah.
And that's going to be the stickiest point.
And then the other question the cynic would ask is, how do you, once a landowner realizes, gee, I got 100 acres here.
Ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah, the cash register begins to ring, right?
Yeah.
So is there any legislation that prohibits the state from being gouged by some of these landowners who might be greedy and want to get the top dollar for their deer yard?
Again, it's going to be a negotiation.
Okay.
And the department, part of this legislation authorizes the department to hire a new person that would be the one initiating contacts with landowners for purchase and negotiating sales. So it's an entirely new position that's funded by this legislation.
Yeah. And this must be an exciting time for the regional wildlife biologists, too, I would think.
I think it would be.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to them since this happened yet. But
Maybe we'll reach out to some of them, get some ideas.
Yeah.
We're going to take a money break, right? Okay. We have to take a break, Jerry.
Sure.
If you have a question for Jerry, don't hesitate to give us a call and ask him a question. Right now, Bob Lehman is just eager to share with you his information about one of our sponsors, General Appliance in Brewer.
And we got to talk about General Appliance in Brewer, as Paul said. And that's the place to go for your camp appliance needs, whether they are gas lights, gas ranges, or gas refrigerators, or even top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Right, the wave, baby.
Thank you, Norm. Appreciate that. Now, Cantrell Appliances is located at 91 Center Street in Brewer. Easy to find. Come across the old bridge, take a right, and a next left, and they and right on the right with half of the block. You've been there, haven't you, Paul?
Oh, yeah, many times.
Have you? Yeah, and you've probably been over for parts, right?
Yes, I have.
That's the place to go for parts, you know, for all of those
appliances. Not only parts, but I've been desperate. My refrigerator up to camp wouldn't work.
Oh.
And I went to Al. I didn't have a clue what to do, and Al says, well, you got this little orifice. You take this orifice out, then you buy some of that spray compressed air, and you spray that baby, screw that back in, you're good to go. And he was
there
right.
You are.
Al knows his stuff.
He knows his stuff, so that's the place to go.
All right.
General Appliance in Brewer. They also sell compost toilets, as we mentioned, and those are great. No running water, no plumbing, no septic to make a mess out of, no leach fields, and no environment issues, and no mosquitoes either. That's great, you know.
That's right.
I may go down and try one of those.
You
really?
Should.
Now, there you go.
You should.
Those are great.
Does he have floor models I can try?
Have you used one?
Yeah, he has floor models.
Okay.
I used one once.
To go outside to use it, though.
But, oh, wait.
And they sell our books over there. I want to get that in, you know.
Yes, they do. All right. General Appliance and Brewer, they've been a sponsor for many years. We appreciate their patronage and urge you to patronize them, as we all do here on Maine Outdoors. We have callers stacking up here who are eager to talk to Jerry Levine. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jerry Levine.
Hi. My question is, do the deer travel long distances to go to the deer yard? I know that's a fact, but do they, if the food runs out in that deer yard, will they die there, or will they go to a different deer yard? I was told that they go there, and no matter what, they're going to go back to that same place. I was told that they put tracking collars on them from Shirley, and they go all the way to Dexter to yard up, and they go through several different deer yards. And I was just wondering if that, where you stand on that. What?
Sure, that's an excellent question. Deer wintering area use is traditional, and it's learned from fawns learn it from their doe, and some deer yards have been used for 50 years or more, and consistent use year after year. We found that when a deer yard is completely cut, the deer will come back the next year, and you'll see a lot of mortality because of that. They had not gone to a new place. Eventually, they will, the survivors will seek out new habitat, and I think seeking out places where deer are being fed is as the case you mentioned from Shirley to Dexter, they're coming to large feeding areas in doing that. The travel distance, there was a deer yard. One I wanted to mention is actually in Quebec, just outside of Jackman, the Armstrong Deer Yard. It's the size of a township. Uh-huh. And they put radio collars on those deer back in the early 80s and late 70s, and they found that most of those deers are spending their summer and fall in Maine in WMDA. So the Quebecis are managing this large yard, and these deer were traveling 20 plus miles between locations in Maine and that Armstrong Deer Yard. There are other examples of where they're, you know, traveling as much as 20 miles or more today, moving from interior parts of northern Maine to Allagash Village and Ashland and that area where they're being fed. So travel patterns do establish, and new ones can be established, but a lot of deer die when the habitat is altered quickly.
Yeah. Okay, good question, caller. We appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we have another caller stacked up. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Jerry Levine.
Hello.
Hello, go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering, deer yards are very important.
Is he still there?
He's there.
Yeah, go ahead, caller. We're sorry.
Deer yards are very important. Are these going to be no hunting zones during the open firearm seasons?
The department is committed to allowing hunting in these deer yards, as, just as they do on their wildlife management areas that are not deer yards. They will be hunted. This came up in a meeting last week with the department, actually, and a problem sometimes develops, and it happened a couple years ago all over northern Maine, where deer yarded up early, and a lot of bucks were shot in wintering habitat, and the department had chosen at that time not to shut down the season early. And of course it would be a nightmare if they did anyway, but that type of conflict would occur in department-owned deer yards, just as they occurred in all the other deer yards a couple years ago. That's one thing, though, that from a policy standpoint, I think the department should examine.
Yeah, those are, we've had two excellent questions, haven't we, Jerry?
Yeah, and this is nothing new. I remember when I was a grad student in 1974, I had gotten my deer the first day of the season, but in that year, we had a big snowstorm in the third week in November, and eight different people from the university went to my research area at Hayden Brook Deer Yard, and they spent a week hunting there, and seven of them came out with bucks. Because the deer had moved into the yard, and so this has been going on for decades.
Yeah, I didn't realize that in some occasions, if you get a cold November, that they would yard up that early.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, just about every year, the third week in November, around the 18th, we get a major low-pressure system come through. Often it's rain, but often it's
heavy
snow.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
you can almost bank on it.
That's kind of a delicate issue, isn't it?
Interesting. Yeah, it is.
See how the department handles that.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you do? Shut the season down early?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough question.
Because it's not only happening in department yards, it's happening in all deer yards of northern Maine where snow accumulates early.
Yeah, interesting. We have any other calls stacked up? Okay, thank you. How much time do we have left, Norm? A couple of minutes?
We have 3 minutes.
Oh, 3 minutes. Okay, anything else you want to share with us? You said you had an interesting deer-coyote encounter at your place. You want to share that with us?
Sure. Anyone who thinks that coyotes don't prey on deer in the summertime, listen up. We were leaving, my wife and I were leaving our home at 5 p.m. last week on, I think it was Thursday, and before entering the highway, Paul, as you know, Route 16 is pretty busy there, you know, we looked both ways, and when we looked up toward Milo, a doe and a fawn came racing across the highway, just at full speed off our property, not 100 yards from us. Right on their tail was a coyote.
Unbelievable.
And that coyote was bent on catching one of those deer, most likely the fawn.
Oh, yeah.
Coyote predation on young fawns is a significant problem wherever coyotes occur. And also, coyotes can typically prey on adult deer any time of the year, not just during the winter.
All right. That triggers a question in my mind. The LD-404, the Deer Yard Protection Legislation, the department already has some coyote control program going, as I recall,
it
right?
It does.
Now,
yes.
does this allow them to enhance that coyote control in the areas that they own?
It allows them, and it specifically...
orders them to do so?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bob has a quick question, then we're going to have to wrap up, I think.
Oh, mentioned deer scrapes and bark and stuff.
Yeah.
Buck deer actually rub saplings and trees to mark, and they probably urinate there and so forth. And that wouldn't be, you've seen that. What would you describe that as? That they don't eat it, they just make a mark there.
Right. That's they're depositing a hormone scent that occurs in their forehead.
Yeah.
They have glands there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And between the antlers, and that's that type of thing is
they have
scent
the same
marking.
Scent on their hocks, on their above the hoofs.
Yeah, they've They've got glands in 5 or 7 locations. But,
yeah. We are out of time, Mr. Lehman.
Yeah, okay.
Jerry, love to have you come back again. It's been a great show.
Looks like we'll need to.
Well, I think we will, for
right.
sure. You're welcome anytime.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate your input tonight. Thank you so much. We appreciate that, and we're glad to have you aboard. And next week, our guest is going to be outdoor woman Sandy Neely, who has a new book called The Deadly Turn. We'll be talking to Sandy about her new book right here on
Maine Outdoors.